for those who know every line, and for those finding Star Wars for the very first time, welcome to Growing Up Skywalker.
Welcome to Growing Up Skywalker. I'm Sam.
Hi, I'm Anna.
And today we are studying Moby Dick.
What?
We've got Whales and Revenge in two episodes of Rebels, The Call and Homecoming.
You know what we have is the Star Wars take on Princess Mononoke.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's talk about all of these things and more as we talk through what happened in The Call and then Homecoming, which are season two, episodes 15, 16, I believe.
That is true, yes. I would just say that Princess Mononoke is a more foundational piece of literature than Moby Dick.
Spicy take.
Despite it not being literature.
And I.
It is a text.
Okay.
As the PhDs say.
Join us for Spice Run Princess Mononoke edition on our Patreon. But let's get into what we're actually talking about in, we call it the main podcast here with The Call.
Okay, what happens?
So the Ghost Crew is completely out of fuel and it's so cold in Star Wars space they actually have to, you know, put on sweaters. When they are going through an asteroid belt looking for a refinery to raid or buy fuel from, not exactly clear.
No, they want to steal it. They want to refuel the Ghost and then give it to the Phoenix Squadron.
Sounds great. So a bunch of Purgles show up, which are interstellar space whales. And Hera hates them because they're varmints and have killed some of her friends.
They're kind of like giant squids and also space whales, like space whale in the front, giant squid in the back.
All business. Yeah,
all exactly. Business. And there is a king Purgle.
There is. So they're flying along and decide to defend the Purgle from some TIE fighters. These TIE fighters are painted yellow and belong to the Mining Guild. And they follow the Purgle / TIE fighters, which are going to the same place. Hera is unamused by this. Ezra's forming a connection with the Purgle, but it'll be fine. So as he's sitting there communing with the Purgles, they come up with a plan of how they're going to steal this fuel from this asteroid base. They're going to use the big pool of unobtainium gas and blow up, as a distraction, most of the mining equipment, steal what they need, and leave. Ezra's like, whoa, whales are cool.
Yeah, it's kind of a heartless plan on the side of the Spectres. And then Ezra is forming this deep connection with the Purgle, especially with the King Purgle. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I don't know, there's something going on here with the Purgle and the gas on this planet and the fuel. It's all connected.
So they have a thrilling airdrop onto this planet and land and immediately begin attacking. Sabine is about to set off the explosives, but Ezra stops her, and the plan has now gone haywire because they're improvising because Ezra won't let them blow up the Purgle.
He just has a sense that mm-hmm. something is going on with that gas. It's needed.
So the new plan is he sits there at a laser blaster covering everyone as they move forward, and then they bring the Ghost in for fueling. So as this is all ensuing, there's a bunch of fighting back and forth. Ezra gets shot off the edge of his platform and falls into the pool of gas and just disappears.
It's like a misty haze all along the bottom of this mining platform. It's mm-hmm. like a blue fog.
So while everyone is in pretty big trouble, these things aren't going nearly as well as they'd hope, Ezra wakes up on the back of a Purgle and he can't breathe because his helmet has gotten knocked off. And he begins to commune with the Purgle. The Purgle's eyes go all hyperspace and his eyes go all hyperspace and he understands what's going on. And the Purgle sends one of its business tentacles forward and gives Ezra his helmet back so he can breathe.
Business tentacles.
So as the Ghost Crew is looking at forming Yushan and being like, bro, we can't lose to this guy. Like, Kanan is genuinely embarrassed.
The Mining Guild leader? Yeah, he is a big schlub.
Ezra says, don't worry, we're coming to rescue you. And they're like, cool, wait, we? A whole bunch of Purgles fly out of the gas cloud and start eating TIE fighters and the foreman, and everyone escapes. Ezra, like, cavalry rides in. Kanan is riding on top of the ghost. Ezra is riding on top of a Purgle. It is absolutely heroic.
He's the whale rider of my dreams.
And they escape off the asteroid, blow up the refinery. The Purgle are very happy. Everyone gets aboard the ship. And one of the things, like histories of the Purgle, is that perhaps they had taught, they had inspired people to build hyperspace drives and gone through hyperspace.
Well, I would say what happens, and you can correct me if you've read this differently, is that they get back on the ship and Ezra's like, one of the things that I realized is that the Purgle needed to go to this mining guild facility and drink the gas because it's how they breathe. This was one stop on a long journey. And everyone's like, a long journey? And then they look out the big bay window at the front of the ghost and they see the Purgle tentacle start to glow in this stripy pattern. And then one by one,
they go to hyperspace.
They shoot into hyperspace.
And so it turns out that these legends are true, that the Purgle are hyperspace capable, did probably inspire people to explore hyperspace. And Hera's like, you know what? I've had a complete turnaround in my attitude towards Purgle, and let's follow them.
Hera joined PETA on this day.
The Purgle for the ethical treatment of aliens.
Yeah, exactly. As an alien herself, that tracks.
So that is the call. And then we go to Homecoming.
Oh, man. Homecoming's a spicy one. So the Rebels situation that we've been following all of season two, where they don't have a base, is starting to really catch up to them. We open up on a big space fight and they lose a lot of A-wing pilots because there's nowhere safe for them to dock in mid-battle.
Yeah.
And so Commander Sato calls in and he's like, listen, I got a hot tip about an Imperial cruiser that is terrorizing a Rebel planet. We could steal it and, you know, take it off of their hands, put it into our hands. And Hera's like, all good, where is it? Commander Sato says, Ryloth, which is, as longtime Clone Wars fans, short-term Bad Batch fans, and current Rebel fans would know, is Hera's home planet.
So she's got to call up the leader of this rebel cell, who is none other than Cham Syndulla.
Hera's dad.
Yeah.
And Cham, we should say here, is not exactly the person that we saw in the Clone Wars or in Bad Batch. It turns out that Hera's mom was killed when the Republic turned into the Empire and then the Empire retook Ryloth. And when that happened, Cham Syndulla turned from this wise, noble fighter leader that he used to be into a radical. He has been radicalized. So now he is not just fighting the Empire for the sake of the galaxy. He's literally just fighting the Empire for the sake of Ryloth. And to his rebel captain daughter, Hera, that is untenable and there is tension.
So the game plan is they have a TIE bomber, and they're going to attempt to use that to sneak aboard this carrier ship.
Yeah, so the Rebels and Gobi Glee and Numa, who we remember from season one of the Clone Wars, they all crowd into this TIE fighter, and they have Rebel A-wings pretend to shoot them down, and then they wounded bird crash land into the Imperial cruiser. So the plan is that the Rebels plus the Freedom Fighters will infiltrate the ship, take it to hyperspace, use it as a base, all good. But Cham betrays them.
The Ryloth cell has satchels full of enough explosives to blow up the whole carrier and are ready to do so.
So Cham and the Freedom Fighters knock out all of the Rebels with stun guns. Cham himself handcuffs Hera to the steering wheel of the TIE. He disables the hyperdrive of the light cruiser. Turns out he wants to make the ship burn for all of Ryloth to see. Unclear if he wants the Spectres to burn with it.
Well, yeah, good question, because it's not like that TIE bomber is flying again. Hera crashed it quite well.
So now Hera has to lead an infiltration, not just against the Imperial cruiser, but also her dad. So together they make it to the bridge, and the Imperial captain has like already called for reinforcements. And so Kanan makes Ezra force trick him successfully for the very first time into making all of the stormtroopers evacuate the ship. It is delightful. But to move forward, Hera and Cham have to, if not reconcile, then agree to work together. And, you know, she gets on the ship intercom and basically says, "Dad, you were such an inspiration to me when I was growing up. You were this incredible leader. You were this fighter. You taught me to do this. And I don't want to just do it for Ryloth. This fight cannot be won on Ryloth alone. We need to do this for the galaxy." And Numa and Gobi Glee down in the hangar bay are both listening, and they radio back and they're like, "Cham, we're with her."
Yeah.
So just as the Imperial enforcements arrive, Cham says, "Fine, I guess you have an opportunity to prove me wrong."
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone races to the guns, and together they take down wave after wave of fighters. And then a proton torpedo catches their stabilizer, and Hera and Cham have to both hop onto the steering wheel together and keep the cruiser from tumbling end over end. Mm-hmm. And Cham is like, "We always were stronger together." And then finally, as the Imperial cruiser closes in on them, they put their final plan into motion. Cham races down to the hangar, and he helps Sabine rig up that original TIE fighter that they shiz housed. They rig it with explosives, and then Ezra force pushes it into space. It tumbles toward the Imperial cruiser, and then Cham takes the remote and blasts it.
Which breaks the Imperial escort cruiser. Just, it's in fire.
It turns into dying. A yes. Fireball. It like nosedives down towards Ryloth in a cloud of fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cham tells Chopper how to fix the hyperdrive. And they zoom out into parts unknown. So the episode ends with the rebels using their new base. And Cham reports, you know, "The exploded cruiser over Ryloth has given the Twi'lek strength to fight against the Empire." And he puts a hand on Hera's shoulder and he says, "I'm proud of you, Captain Syndulla."
Mm-hmm.
And then I just was leaking tears and sweat from the pores of my body. And I'm crying now thinking about it. Even though I'm mad at Cham.
It's interesting, Cham's arc as who he was in The Bad Batch and in Rebels and in The Clone Wars, how he's this complex character with all this arc. And it did take a lot for him. It took like bouncing his ideas off someone else. And I think more importantly, at the end of that last conversation, he says, "You're a dreamer like your mother." And Hera says, "And I learned to be a leader from you."
Oh.
And so that is like passing on the mantle of the Ryloth resistance on to Hera as well, which we also see because Gobi and Numa are also like, "I'm with you, Hera," because we saw in The Bad Batch that Gobi is like, "Hey, Hera, you want to learn how to fly and like kill stormtroopers? Because I'm doing that this afternoon."
Yeah, totally. Well, The Bad Batch also taught Hera how to fly too, which is so beautiful.
Yeah, and importantly, that all the Bad Batch arc is after this in the Prime Universe.
It backfilled.
And so, yeah, it backfilled it a little bit. So when we see Cham Syndulla, because I guess we'll just start, just dive right in on Cham.
Yeah, okay, let's start with Homecoming. Let's start with Cham.
Okay, so diving right in on Cham, he is pretty clear on his intentions from the get-go. He's like, "The plan is we blow up this carrier." And Hera, and it's funny because Kanan is like, "Oh, you're Cham Syndulla. Mace Windu says you're so cool." And Sabine is like, "I read your book.
I studied your tactics in school. You are amazing."
Yeah, like you were able to fight 20-1 odds for years.
100-1 odds.
Yeah, and Hera's like, "Dad, if you would have been able to blow up this carrier without our help, you would have. So you need to compromise."
Right, because
she sees right through him.
She totally does. She totally does. I'm not sure if it helps or hinders, but the voice actor for Cham in this episode is the same one as for Hondo Ohnaka.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, and so you can definitely hear some Hondo in his voice, and I can't decide if it's helpful to make him seem untrustworthy or if it, like, gives him this sort of unearned edge of gleeful mischief. I can't quite decide.
As Cham moves throughout the carrier, so it's important to note that this is like a light carrier. It's a big, it's a quarter circle basically, and it's got four big bays in the front of it. It just looks like a big wing. But as Cham is like walking through it calmly, he's split off Gobi and Numa, and they're being chased by Zeb and Sabine. And he's walking through and taking over this carrier by himself. Mm-hmm. And he's like shooting around corners and killing stormtroopers. It's like, oh, this is what someone who's been fighting a war for 20 years looks like when they go into battle. They just carve a bloody path.
Yeah. So the war, we met Cham in season one of the Clone Wars. It was the final arc. It was Rescue on Ryloth. And he had been fighting a war for years.
Yeah.
Because we started the Clone Wars in the middle of the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. And Cham had already become established as a firebrand freedom fighter. So we met him in a war. Then in the Bad Batch, we meet him at the start of a new war. Mm-hmm. And now he has just been continuing to be at war for the entire length of time that it took for Numa to grow up. So what, 20 years?
Yeah.
So he's been at war for 20 years.
Yeah. He's completely, it's just completely radicalized in that direction. I find that really interesting. And especially the contrast to Hera. There's a really delightful scene where Ezra sits down with Hera and he's like, surely nothing's more important than family. And Hera's like, well, no, I mean, there's like the cause. And when some people become too devoted to the cause, then family no longer matters to them. Then,
well, because so Ezra asks why she mm-hmm. and Cham have become estranged.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's because when my mom died, he could no longer give himself over to sentimentality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I became a tool for him to use in this war. I'm not really his daughter anymore. And then he storms in and mm-hmm. Ezra leaves because Ezra's like, well, nothing's more important to me than family.
Yeah.
And Hera agrees with him. And then
a really important scene. Hera and Cham are arguing back and forth, and Hera drops into a Ryloth accent.
Yeah, her French Twi'lek accent slips out because she's so mad. And I'm like, girlfriend, that's what happens to me.
Well, also, like, the infantilization of talking to your parents. When I go down to visit my parents, I pick up the local accent, you know?
The local non-accent of non-accent Coloradans.
You just skip words and consonants. It doesn't seem like an accent. You just chop things off.
It's an accent neutral place. It's more about
the mannerisms.
Like, being immune to small talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't really.
Have stuff to do. I know.
I love small talk. I love a good small talk.
So this idea of becoming like dropping into this parent-child relationship. And then Hera has to recover from that over time, I think is really interesting.
That is such a good point. I wanted to talk about, I mean, I didn't even pick up on the infantilization. That is brilliant.
Hmm.
What I picked up on was, and I don't want to make this too political, but the conflict between Cham and Hera seemed at its heart to be about how Cham is a boomer who doesn't have the capacity to care about anything unless it directly affects him.
Mm, okay.
And Hera is his empathetic millennial daughter who has overdeveloped her ability to care about the big picture because of the lack of her role model to do that. And so she has overdeveloped her sense of being able to care about everything. So now she's fighting for the entire galaxy because Cham is only capable of fighting for Ryloth.
That's an interesting take. This episode, I believe, is from 2015 and so, or aroundabouts then. And so that is like, if it is the boomers versus millennials narrative, that is the early onset of when that started being a thing.
Right. I mean, this was created in the time of the rise of Trump, which I would argue yeah. is a time when millennials did see their elders turn on their future and sell out the possibility of a better future for a short-term gain by voting for Trump.
There's that. There's also there's a very funny meme. It's an Andor meme, and it's a picture of all the cast of Andor with a leftist infighting simulator 2024, because that is what that show is, and that is what this is as well. The concept of how often revolutionary armies become like, oh, this is the People's Republic of Eastern Northern Minnesota's army, and we're only interested in liberating this little quadrant, and how that lack of perspective is the biggest thing which prevents like permanent revolution. I mean, that's like the main argument against Trotskyism. Trotsky argued for permanent worldwide revolution and this idea of like a world communist movement, but it is almost invariably been taken at this regional or countrywide level that breaks things from having that. Because once an army takes over its little region or its country, then they're like, well, we've now had a revolution, but if we were to go to the next country over, it would be an invasion. And even if they like our politics, even if they agree with us politically, we don't speak the language, we don't drink the same drinks or eat the same foods, and so we are invaders, and they will defend themselves to the death against us.
You know what? Saw Gerrera called Cham Syndulla.
Yes.
In that scene that we go back to 100 million times a day in Andor, when Luthen goes to Saw Gerrera and is like, please fight with other rebels.
Yeah.
And Saw Gerrera is like, no, they're separatists, they're neo-republicans, they're sectionists.
Yes.
He was talking about Cham Syndulla. Cham Syndulla wants to liberate Ryloth. Hard stop.
Yeah.
That is all he cares about.
He doesn't care about overthrowing the empire. And that's something that Saw Gerrera is like, I am the only one.
Yeah. Saw Gerrera is like, Cham Syndulla is useless to me.
Yeah. Because what's he going to do? Free Ryloth? Cool. Like, what am I going to do with a free Ryloth?
What am I going to do? Help him free Ryloth?
Spend a whole bunch of X-Wings for nothing? Yeah.
Saw Gerrera. God bless Saw Gerrera. I hate on him so much, but he's right.
And also, his version, while ideologically pure, also is only militaristic.
It is also a dead end game. Mm-hmm.
And so we see this scale from here's Cham Syndulla and his best fighters. And if his best fighters include a also 50-year-old man and a 20-year-old girl, okay, cool. Maybe your forces are a little depleted. And then his daughter completely blows him out of the water because she's like, I do this all day. You act like blowing up an Artakan's class cruiser will liberate your planet. I call it Thursday.
Yeah. Dad, you are so desperate for a symbolic victory that it's all you can care about. Yeah. And I do this as my day job. This is a half day's work.
Also, a symbolic victory, once again, does nothing. A symbolic victory for Ryloth doesn't save me A-Wing pilots.
To be fair, it did revolutionize Ryloth against the Empire, and now all of the Twi'leks are apparently fighting against the Empire. So Cham was right. He knew his people.
Mm-hmm.
However, he once again failed to see the big picture.
Not to mention that despite the fact that he does share a little Hondoism there, having a ship stolen is way more embarrassing for the Empire than having it blown up.
Well, yes. And what I was going to say was like, it is so typical, and I'm sorry if I'm making this too spicy. It's so typical for a boomer to always get what they want in the end because their family enables them. So Cham gets everything he wants in addition to things he didn't have the capacity to imagine he wanted. They steal a ship and blow one up in because Hera made it possible for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like his plan, it would have worked, but it was the work of his daughter to make it a bigger, better victory.
And he just like, I mean, didn't waste, but like deployed a whole bunch of explosives and you got to go clean them up. And it's like, why did you even spend all that money on explosives? You could be using this to kill stormtroopers.
Yeah. And also, I guess I'm just salty that his big reconciliation with Hera was A, it's not that he said, okay, you've convinced me that this is the right plan. He says, okay, I guess you have a chance to prove me wrong.
Well, that's not the reconciliation moment, well, yeah, though.
So that's the moment that allows them to move forward. His reconciliation is that I'm proud of you. So once again, it's all about Cham. It's about his ego.
But that is what the conversation that Hera and Cham have is that she tells him, I stopped being your daughter. You were never proud of me. You never, and like by not trusting in me as Phoenix leader, like Jun Sato, who is the leader of the rebellion in this whole sector, was like, Hera, here is some information. Do with it what you want.
I call you General.
Yeah. And so General Syndulla rolls up and is like, this is what I need. And her dad's like, no. And she's like, I'm really not your, I haven't been your daughter for a long time. And that is not the relationship we have at this time.
I am not asking you this as Hera Syndulla. I am asking you this as General Syndulla of the rebellion.
Yeah. And if we want to be Syndulla and Syndulla rebels at law, then that's cool too. But like, that is not this relationship. And I think Hera held true to who she was the entire time. Because when she wakes everyone up, they're like, Sabine is like waking up from being stunned. And is, what do we do? Do we scrub the mission? And Hera's like, no, we're going to go beat up my dad and beat up the Imperials and steal the ship. Like, now I'm furious.
Me too, Hera, on your behalf.
And so the person who had to change was Cham.
Yes.
Yeah. And
did he?
Yeah.
Tell me the criteria by which you define him as being changed.
I think he opened up the concept. I think that by seeing how Hera was like a separate person, and by seeing that she is a separate leader, and by Hera acknowledging that she gained leadership from him, but also by Cham noting that Hera has the best of the qualities of both her parents, he is willing to cede the mantle of importance. It's almost as if he is now recruited to the rebellion in some capacity by Hera, as opposed to just being out for himself.
Ooh.
I think that's the important part for him.
So he had to recognize her not as his child, but as an individual and a war hero in her own right.
Yes.
He had to accept her for who she is. And he had to name the parts of her that he recognized. He had to say, you are a dreamer like your mother and a fighter like me.
I actually think he had to recognize her as a child first, because he had been recognizing her as a fighter that worked for him. And then she came in and said, we're now collaborators. And he hated that and he backstabbed. But then he recognized, not only is this my daughter, not only has she grown beyond me, but I have learned to respect that and I will respect that.
Yeah. I guess I'm thinking about him recognizing her agency because of the fight that they have in the little room where she's repairing Chopper. Mm-hmm. Because Cham storms in and he says, is this the astromech that you put together back on Ryloth? Mm-hmm. And she says, yes. And he says, you have wasted so much time repairing that heap of junk. And if you had devoted that much time to my cause, think how far we could be. Mm-hmm. And so that is fundamentally not recognizing that Hera has her own needs, wants, and desires.
Yeah.
And separate it is from serving him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're 100% right. It's not that he was only recognizing her as a fighter. He had her in a double bind, which is that you are a fighter and you're my daughter, so you have to do exactly what I say at all times.
Mm-hmm. And now I think he has grown beyond that a little bit by getting the boomer treatment of having cake, eating it too, tax breaks for me, not for thee. And like, he gets everything he wants at the end.
Yeah.
So as long as he doesn't have to compromise on anything, then he's happy.
Exactly. And now out of his overflowing cup, perhaps he might see fit to trickle a little bit towards the rebels.
Well, you know, as far as Star Wars goes, or where Prime Universe goes, this is a pretty healthy parent-child relationship, so.
Ooh, I know. Yikes. Well, he's no Cutla Quain, that's for sure. He's no Kanan. I mean, Kanan really got some good dad points these two episodes.
He did.
So maybe we need to talk about the call, and I can point out all of the ways in which Kanan was great.
Let's do that.
Okay.
Okay, so in our long-standing tradition of talking about things out of order, let's go back to the call.
You mean my favorite Rebels episode ever?
Is this your favorite ever?
This episode had me crying in a coffee shop. like not subtly.
And it was Saturday morning and crowded too.
Yeah, we just had a really busy day yesterday. We threw a party and I was like, the only time I'm going to be able to watch these episodes is if I sit in the corner of a coffee shop and borrow their Wi-Fi to stream Disney Plus.
Hey, it's valid, but
thank you for that.
I know that you, so for listeners who are not familiar with Princess Mononoke, which Anna referenced, it is a mid-90s,
It is a mid-90s Miyazaki Studio Ghibli film, one of his highest regarded films to date, and it is a classic eco-warrior man versus nature, nature versus man story, which is precisely what The Call is.
I love The Call for so many reasons, partially because there's this spectrum of Star Wars, and it goes from like real freaking weird to like Andor. Andor is not weird. Nothing about Andor is weird. There's no magic in Andor. And then we get to episodes like The Call, where there's space whales who can commune with people, and the fact that the mining company is eating this, is like messing with the space whales mating pod or food source or whatever, is the plot.
Yeah.
And the space whales will communicate with a force sensitive individual and also use their tentacles to put his helmet back on. This understanding between them shows that it is such a magical world, and I love it.
It's magical, and it turns this episode into not just a man versus nature story, but a man with nature story, which, if you ask me, is the only kind of story we should have moving forward in real life and also in literature. But so I love it because it is a parable about man's dependence on fuel.
Yes.
And the inherent contradiction between that dependence and our ability to let nature exist as it is without interference.
What's funny about that, though, is that the, you know, the Rebels do avail themselves of the fuel that's right there.
Exactly. And that puts them in contradiction with nature, the Purrgil.
Yeah.
Right? So what we have is a society that is dependent on fuel. And because of that fuel, it gets in the way of nature's workings. And, like, imagine if people had gotten in the way of Purrgil eons ago and the Purrgil had died out and no one ever developed hyperspace.
Yeah, that would be a really problematic – I mean, that'd be not a sci-fi story. You pretty much need Faster Than Light to have an interesting sci-fi story. So, yeah.
And, like, the call is also an object lesson in why nature will always do things better than humans or aliens can invent by mimicking them. They will always do these processes better biologically than what we can cobble together with technology.
Well, okay. So we watched the Rebels recon on this, and people asking questions like, what about the black holes in Legends of L'Saat? And how do Kanan and Ezra breathe in space? And Pablo Hidalgo is like, it is Star Wars. There's no physics here.
It's not that deep.
It's not that deep. It's differently deep. But the idea of evolution as driven by natural selection in our prime universe, if it holds true in the Star Wars universe, would indicate that, like, yes, creatures would evolve to do things more efficiently than anyone ever could. So,
well, okay. So space travel, they can do better because they don't need technology. They just need a biological process. Converting energy into a usable form. I mean, people in Star Wars have to fuel up a ship, but the Purrgil can just do that metabolically.
Yeah.
Like, whatever people, whatever the galaxy wants to do, Purrgil can do it better, is what I'm saying. And I'm thinking about, for example, what is it, monarch butterflies that have the iridescent structures in their wings?
That is the morpho butterflies.
Yeah. And humans copy that to make cool 3D printed structures and camouflage and all kinds of things. But morpho butterflies just do that.
Just do it to get laid, honestly.
Yeah. Like, they didn't have to work hard. They just do that.
They just are blue.
Yeah. Morpho butterflies do it better.
Yeah, so the idea of nature having a rhythm, a consistency, a way of going, and being able to communicate that with someone is really interesting. And I think it shows that, like, that is definitely one of the ethos of the Star Wars universe, is that the light side is good, is in harmony with nature. Because we see anytime there is some sort of unnatural thing going on, it is the Jedi who get involved with it and connect with it and try to repair it. And I think that actually calls back some of the deep problems with the Clone Wars, which is that the Jedi Temple was on Coruscant and there's nothing there related to nature, you know?
Oh, you mean how it's a city planet and they have to ship in all of their food because you can't grow anything on metal?
Yeah, exactly.
And there's no gardens anywhere, except I guess on the Jedi Temple.
But, like, is a garden a good stand-in for being the type of Jedi who's raised on a starship and you just have to commune with whales to figure out what's going on from time to time? It's once again showing that Ezra's schooling is spectacular. You know, he's learning so much about the galaxy.
Yeah. It's interesting. So the Call is another beautiful example of his ability to commune with living creatures. It's weird, though, how this episode uses his connection with the Purrgil to turn him into the only one with real empathy.
Well, yes and no. It's kind of a spectrum here. You've got
the Ezra, Hera to Ezra spectrum.
The Hera to Ezra spectrum. So Hera is like, kill all Purrgil. Zeb is like, I will kill whatever you put in front of me. Chopper is like, I will kill. Sabine is saying, hey, we don't have a huge amount of electricity available for the cannons, so let's just see what's going on. I'm open to everything. Kanan is extremely supportive of Ezra and also saying, like, hey, maybe we should listen to Ezra because Ezra is constantly in communing with animals and I trust him. And Ezra is like, I am straight up mind to mind with the Purrgil King. So it's a full spectrum of the whole ghost crew, but Kanan is, I think, very supportive of Ezra.
No, he totally is. That's why I said that Kanan got some major dad points for me this episode. You know, like, it's been a while since Kanan was the best dad, but when he looks at Ezra and says, okay, kid, I trust you to do what you need to do with the Purrgil, that is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's awesome. It's part of the relationship that I think is more master Padawan as opposed to dad son. Because as we saw in Homecoming, it is difficult for a parent to let go of a child, but it is the duty of a Jedi to let go of a Padawan.
Ooh.
And so when we contrast those two things and we see here's a relationship between a master and a knight and a Padawan, and here's a parent and a child, one of those is actually a more healthy relationship because it is the duty to train them, as opposed to what Cham was doing, which is the duty to have a soldier who is a mindless automaton who happens to be as creative in battle as you are.
Mm-hmm. It is a healthier form of detachment because you're connected, but you're not unhealthily attached and you're not completely detached.
Yeah, exactly.
You care what happens to your Padawan and you let them be their own people and you recognize that at some point you will let them go.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Cham was probably never going to let Hera go, but also never going to care about her in the way that she wanted him to.
Yeah.
Not to completely project my stuff onto Star Wars, but what I liked about what the Call showed about Ezra's Force connection is that it shows that, yes, he's a Padawan. No, he does not have full control over his Force powers. He's trying to, like, stop his Force fall and just completely misses the platform.
And then panics.
And is saved by Kanan.
Yeah.
But in all the ways that matter, he is shown to be a true Jedi. He connects with the living force. He uses the living force to connect with living creatures. He's nonviolent. He's creative. He understands the big picture. And he's not really concerned about himself. He's concerned about the preservation of living creatures.
And being connected with the living creatures and sharing with them is what saves the day for everyone, mm-hmm. which is cool. Because yeah. otherwise they would have gotten, you know, they would have died. They would have gotten captured by the stupid mining guild, which is just a bunch of like Rodians and visors and a weird spider person.
I know. It is embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like a furry spider person.
Yeah.
A big doofus. As Ezra is the pivot point around this whole episode. And mm-hmm. I like that because I think – as the seasons go on, I assume the stakes will get higher and higher. And if Ezra is already a fulcrum.
Oh.
Not an Ahsoka fulcrum, but a fulcrum.
A pivot or a hinge, if you will.
Exactly. Then I think he's just going to grow in that ability and be able to affect larger and larger events.
I think it's also really cool that this has turned into Ezra's shtick. You know, like he sucked at it at first and then he
couldn't even connect with a loth cat. Womp womp.
But now he can connect with living creatures and it serves him. And I think that's cool because we do see, I believe Ezra's, well, so I noticed this importantly, Ezra has not actively killed anyone.
He stuns them. He causes their deaths.
He does reflect blaster bolts back into stormtroopers to presumably kill them. He stuns people because he's got his little stun lightsaber.
Yeah.
And
sometimes they topple over the mining platform into a cloud of unbreathable gas. Kills them.
But he's riding this Purgle and a TIE fighter comes by shooting at him and he slices the wing off.
It is so cool.
And that is, I think, the most directly violent thing that he has done.
And he did it in defense of another living creature.
Exactly.
Not for himself.
So he is always on the defense, never on the attack with lethal force. And I think that's really cool.
That is also a true Jedi mark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So kind of the last thing I wanted to talk about is that it's really interesting how the rest of the Spectres, as you said, they're on a spectrum, a spectrum. They're on a spectrum this episode. It's very interesting to me that Hera is at one of the distant points and Ezra's at the other. Hera was set up in the call to be a foil for Ezra, yeah. Almost the antagonist.
You know what it reminds me of is nothing so much as ranchers versus wolves. Right?
I had the same thought.
Okay.
Okay, for those who need to catch up a little bit, 5 gray wolves were introduced into Colorado last month, so in January 2024, mm-hmm. and it caused, obviously, well, maybe not obviously if you don't live out west, it caused a big stink with ranchers because as gray wolves stabilize elk populations and basically course correct entire biomes and ecological systems, sometimes they do eat ranchers' cattle.
It is important to note that less than 1 out of 100 wolf-blamed cattle deaths are actually wolves.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ludicrous how few cattle wolves actually kill because ranchers are like, oh, wolves killed my cattle. It's like, there's no wolves in this state.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
I had the exact same thought, Sam. I love that we picked up on that. Mm-hmm. Hera is like, Purgle should be exterminated because they crash into ships and like, I've lost friends that way.
And Ezra is like, if they're big, dumb space whales and you run into them, that's kind of on you.
Are you a bad pilot or not? Just say it.
I like that because that calls into... Speaking of the American West here, one of the things, because I grew up in the American West, and there is a distinct respect for nature of screw around and find out. Like people do stuff and it's like, oh no, they died in an avalanche. It's like, oh yeah, I know that the avalanche training course is scheduled for next week. Did they go? Have they ever been to that? No? Well, I guess they deserved to die then if you weren't prepared for what was going on. And it's the same thing with any big creature. Like some people go to Yellowstone and be like, oh, I'm going to go pet the buffalo. It's like, do not
Do not pet
do
a
not
buffalo.
Perceive the bison from closer than 6 football fields.
Don't look them in the eye.
Yeah.
Don't feed them ever.
Don't perceive them, because if they take a shine to you, that is like 2,400 pounds of muscle that is just going to beat up your car and you.
They will trample you to death with their hooves. Rightfully so. Don't mess with the buffalo.
And that's the pergol as well, that they are part of nature. They do recognize that the human beings who can commune with them are part of nature, and they're smart enough to ask for help. But yeah, they're big. They'll bump into your ship. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm big clumsy. But it weighs, 20,000 tons and it'll knock your ship askew. Sorry, I didn't mean to knock you over.
It's just interesting. I didn't think that Hera would be the person that ends up embodying a main Star Wars tension of, is sentient human-esque or alien life more important than the lives of creatures? We have talked about that a lot on this podcast. I'm thinking about the Zillow Beast. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've had this conversation mm-hmm. a lot. And it's just interesting. Hera is such a nurturing mother fighter figure, and I'm used to always being on her side, and I'm really not on her side this time.
I find this really interesting, because I think you are being more struck by this because you are putting Hera on a pedestal and you want her to be perfect instead of having perhaps
one
assumption that she is carried with her from her upbringing or from her childhood, which does not serve her.
Yeah, Sam. You don't have to read me like a freaking book all the time.
I just see you being like, I just can't imagine Hera being imperfect in any way. It's very strange to me.
It's very weird to me.
Whereas every other character has their own various imperfections.
Okay, you're totally right.
Yeah.
I am not allowing Hera to have foibles.
Yeah. And it also made it, I think it was the right case for her, because she is the pilot. She is the one who's had the most interactions with pergols.
Well, and also the tension that she has in the call does carry beautifully into Homecoming. It mm-hmm. kind of gives her a continuity between these two episodes, where she's tense and upset already about the pergol situation. And then she has to talk to her dad.
Yeah. And she's disappointed about that. But she also does take the call. She says, I guess I'm the person who needs to be calling Champs and Dula, because no one else is going to actually be able to communicate with him or see through his BS, because that is what she does right away. Because in that episode, we really see, Kanan make a fool out of himself.
Aww.
Talking about how cool Champs and Dula is.
I loved Kanan's interactions with Cham in a weird way. I mean, I loved Kanan trying to impress Cham so bad, and Cham not needing to be impressed with Kanan back. Like, Kanan kind of, walks into the TIE to hang out with Hera, and he's like, sir, I could listen to your stories all day.
And Hera slams the door shut, like, super fast each time.
Well, yeah, and also, Cham is not like, oh, you're too kind. He's like, son, I could talk about myself all day.
It's very funny, because as a, cishet male, I can relate to being like, I need to impress this romantic partner's dad, but are you impressing their dad for your sake or for their daughter's sake or whom? And Kanan is like both, right? He's like, you're a war hero of the war I fought in as a child. And also, I'm in a relationship with your daughter and want to impress you. And Cham Syndulla is like, you are, yes, a Jedi. Cool. Love that for you. I'll remember your name probably eventually.
Exactly. It's like, are you impressing them or are you just flattering their ego?
And that is what Kanan's doing, and that is why it's so cringe to me.
Oh, I loved it as a big flatterer of people.
It's that small talk thing.
I related hard. I'm like, it's not serving me. Like, you do end up and you finish the interaction and they're like, wow, I feel really good about myself. I'm never going to think about the person that made me feel really good about myself again.
That's true.
And that is exactly what happened with Kanan and Cham.
Yeah. So Cham definitely has some stuff to work through, and we get to see Hera work through stuff, and we get to see Ezra level up.
So. Once again, life lessons from Star Wars.
Well, if we're ready to determine who taught us the most life lessons, ooh, then let's roll into some
Baywatch.
All right. I'll bet $5 that I can guess your bae.
$5. Cold hard cash or Venmo? Cold hard cash.
Venmo.
Venmo? Okay. You can Venmo me $5 if you guess my bae.
Your bae is Hera.
No.
Oh, no.
Wait. I said you could Venmo me $5 if you guess my bae. I think it should have been you can Venmo me $5 if you don't guess my bae.
Well, right? Either way, I have to give you $5.
You owe me $5. My bae is Ezra.
Ezra, good choice.
I can't believe you didn't see that coming.
I kind of did. I mean, I feel like I may have caused this myself. I may have lost myself $5 by pointing out that it is not actually upon Pablo Hidalgo and Dave Filoni and the whole Star Wars corpus that Hera is imperfect. It is
no,
that.
No, I knew going in. I mean, The Call is now my favorite Rebels episode because in large part, I think Ezra embodies something extremely important for all of us to remember, which is that we should work with nature. Technology should work with nature. Technology should enable us to be more in tune with nature than in conflict against it. And what it takes is a radical empathy and putting the needs of something else before your own.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Well, I also chose Ezra. So I think that it also shows across these, he's very empathic towards people and their problems. And he's really just not losing himself at all, but putting himself in this role of empowering people and creatures in a meaningful way. And I think that's really valuable. Yeah, especially, as you said, with the confluence of nature and technology, the Force and tradition, we've reached a really important thing for what the right path is. And we've talked a lot, especially in season one of Rebels, about what the moral compass of the Rebels is. And the fact that it is a consensus and a consensus building process. And we saw in The Legends of L'Assad that Zeb is like, hey, it is my turn today. We are doing stuff. Kanan is often that person. Ezra has been assuming that role in a really valuable way. And also last episode in Protector of Conquered Dawn, Sabine did it. And so this idea of who gets to be the moral compass and who gets to teach others what they are building together did fall on Ezra in The Call. And I think that's really valuable. But it also fell on Ezra in Homecoming when he has that conversation with Hera saying family is super important.
Yeah, it's kind of like who gets to take a turn guiding the priorities of the Spectres? Who gets to take a turn determining what the family is going to do. And it has not often been Ezra until we're reaching this midpoint in season two.
And it shows that he has not only leveled up his talk to animals powers, but it's also his empathy and his Force powers, as well as his maturity. And I think that's really cool. And Kanan sees it, and Kanan also is always like, we need to listen more to Ezra.
Yeah.
And that's very cool. Props to Kanan for saying that.
Yeah.
Over and over again. Also props to Kanan for being able to pretend to be a burning TIE bomber pilot. He just puts
he
on his fake
so
accent.
He did so good.
Oh, 975. We're coming in hot.
And I don't want to discount Hera. Yeah. Hera has a unique ability to see the big picture. She is 100% right in Homecoming. Mm-hmm. She does everything right. She is incredible. I just like Ezra's plot in The Call tugs at every single one of my heartstrings like a harp.
Mm.
There's no coming back from that. I'm coming back for you, baby. I'm coming back for you.
Watching someone in what's it called? Lost Commanders, when Ezra and Kanan and Zeb jump out of the back and land on top of an AT-AT, and Wolf and Gregor are just like the old times. Imagine how someone is feeling. Imagine how Kanan is feeling when he looks back and he's like, we're going to lose to these guys. I've been being a rebel for all these years. And then a bunch of space whales show up being ridden by my Padawan. I would be so proud.
Of course you would.
I'd be like, this is the kind of thing that makes Jedi famous. This is what we are proud of. This is amazing.
Ezra
did it.
I agree. Go Ezra.
All right. Go Ezra.
Okay, Sam, what are we watching next week?
We are watching Rebels Season 2, Episodes 17 and 18, The Honorable Ones and Shroud of Darkness.
Wow. I think these episodes are going to boot us into the final third of Season 2.
Yeah, we're in the end game now because the end of Season 2 is a doubleheader. And so we're getting really close to the end. And the end of Season 2 is really critical for the whole Rebels arc. So I feel like we've now reached the point over the course of Season 2, we've picked up some old clone veterans. We've picked up Cham Syndulla. We've picked up Purgle.
Ryder Azadi.
Mm-hmm. We've picked up, what's her name? Blood Sister.
Katsuonu.
And so now we've got an army. We've got this new carrier. We've got all sorts of things. We've really ramped up what the Rebels can do.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to see that.
All of the pieces of a new army are moving into place.
And all of the Rebels are so critical to it.
Yeah, that's really cool. Mm-hmm. Well, we have one interesting piece of news that came out last week, which is that Bad Batch Season 3 is premiering in just a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah, like 4 or 5 weeks. Oh, no.
So we asked the fan base. Mm-hmm. We put a poll on our Instagram stories and on Instagram about whether we should watch Bad Batch Season 3 immediately as it comes out, if we should finish Rebels Season 4. Results were inconclusive.
So if you have an opinion about that, we'll put some more polls up and see what's going on. Otherwise, we will use our best judgment and probably do it. My preference, I think, is after Rebels, because we've got a little bit of time before Rogue One.
Okay. That sounds good to me. It's interesting. This is the very first wrench that has ever come up in our chronological watch through. We've always been able to slot new content in really nicely and not break our chronology. So I guess we were due for this at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, the Acolyte's going to come out and that's before everything.
I know.
So we're going to be in a little bit of trouble here.
And I'm not sad about the boys being back.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's going to be good. Anyway, look for those opportunities for input on our social media. As always, you can find us as Growing Up Skywalker on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Threads. We are also releasing bonus audio content on our Patreon, and we would love for you to become one of our sustaining members at just $3 a month.
And there you'll find all the stuff on Visions, which we are having a ton of fun with, especially in Season 2. It is really, it's really cool.
It's really good.
So join us there, join us everywhere, and send this episode to your parents.
Ooh.
Found or blood.
Biological or chosen.
Yeah.
All opportunities are open. And make sure to drop us 5 stars and perhaps leave us a review telling us what you like so much about us. And we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.